Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Winter wheat has headed on 11% of the acreage nationally.
USDA's chief meteorologist, Mark Brusberg, on wheat.
Typically, the five-year average is 7%, and last year was 2%, so they're above both the five-year average and last year's pace. We haven't seen any heading in Kansas yet. Texas is 40%. They're always early because they warm up a little bit quicker than they do farther north. Texas is 40% headed. Typically, they would be 32% headed this time of year. So that spring warmth is doing them a lot of good down there. And really, even in the Midwest, some of that warming has had some impact.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The Farm Bill continues to be a vital investment to our producers, our competition with China, and our American economy.
Iowa representative and member of the House Ag Committee, Randy Feenstra.
An important component of this Farm Bill is the crop insurance program. Before coming to Congress, I sold crop insurance in my hometown of Hull, Iowa. I confidently say that this program is a crucial piece to the safety net of the farming community. When severe weather strikes, like we had in Iowa with a derecho several years ago, the economy can take a turn very quickly. Crop insurance protects that farmer during the most unpredictable times. That's why we must pass a farm bill that includes this robust investment in federal crop insurance program. I was proud to introduce legislation that would help deliver a discount to help the next generation of Iowa farmers who utilize this important management tool. With nearly 40% of American farmland expected to change hands in the next two decades, this bill will make investments to the next generation and not allow our farmland to fall into the hands of our foreign adversaries. My bill and the Farm Bill at large will help keep families rooted in rural communities, continue Iowa's proud tradition of farm families, and keep China away from our farmland. I represent the second largest agricultural producing district in the country that has over 50,000 active farm crop insurance policies. I will continue to be a strong voice for agriculture and ensure that we pass a strong farm bill for Iowa and the nation that enhances crop insurance and assists the next generation.
Feenstra joined by Ohio's Max Miller, also a member of the House Ag Committee, on the floor of the House.
I'd like to emphasize the importance of passing an updated farm bill that supports our agricultural industry by strengthening the farm safety net, bolsters rural economies, and meets the growing food security and affordability difficulties that are impacting American families. Mr. Speaker, agriculture and food-related industries are responsible for almost $1.4 trillion of the United States gross domestic product. Yet, American farmers, specifically farmers in my district, face daunting challenges in providing a stable and affordable food supply to our nation. In Ohio, I've heard farmers and ranchers' concerns about continued inflationary pressures, regulatory hurdles, limited trade markets, animal health, and a broad range of other issues. Through the House Agricultural Committee's busy schedule over the past 16 months, I've seen the importance of policies that keep the farm safety net strong, incentivize conservation, encourage innovative research initiatives, support specialty crops, allow farmers to grow our energy resources, and much more. Mr. Speaker, the United States Department of Agriculture recently reported that our nation has lost over 140,000 farms in the last 5 years. This is unsustainable. The USDA's most recent farm income forecast reflects the urgent need to act. The report anticipates a 25% decrease in farm income from 2023 to 2024, one of the largest year-to-year dollar reductions in net farm income on record. Failure to pass an updated farm bill could exacerbate these already growing problems and have a devastating impact on our economy and food supply chains. The United States food and agricultural sector has an economic output of over $8.6 trillion and cannot afford to wait. I hope that my colleagues will recognize the magnitude of these issues and help us to pass a sound farm bill quickly.
Members of the committee speaking on behalf of the farm bill on Monday. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
I have to say that in the 2 years since I've been a commissioner, some of the most difficult moments I've had is in talking to folks in food deserts.
Alvaro Bedoya is commissioner of the U.S. Federal Trade Commission.
2 years ago now, we met with the Ogallala Lakota Tribal Council in the dairy aisle of our Abui Foods in Pine Ridge, South Dakota. And they were talking about how there were 13-year-olds showing up at the emergency room with ulcers because they ran out of money halfway through the month. They could only afford soda and chips. Or you had kids who were going to school and hoarding food at lunch because they were the only ones who could bring home food at the end of the day. And I think it is just such a horror.
Zach Beasons is Senior Enforcement Counsel with the Office of the Minnesota Attorney General.
Our friends at the Department of Agriculture have a new grant that states can apply for funding for market studies and for antitrust enforcement related to agriculture. And so we're having a lot of internal conversations about which kinds of studies do we think are most interesting and are most likely to bear fruit, so to speak, in terms of pointing us toward potential solutions to encourage competition in these food markets. We've got a variety of efforts in both advocacy and education. On the advocacy front, we testified in front of our legislature last year in full support of a sweeping right to repair law that the legislature passed with a big asterisk on it for farm equipment. And so we're continuing to have conversations with advocates and organizers who are trying to close that exception. We also led a group of states in writing comments in support of the Packers and Stockyards Act proposed rule on transparency between chicken processors and growers, and we were pleased to see that rule adopted. We also have developed a pretty robust training program for procurement agents to detect bid rigging and other foul play in a variety of markets, food markets included. And so we've been going around to state and municipal and county level purchasers and trying to get them thinking about competition as much as they can, because a lot of their work is to get a contract that meets the needs of the states, of the state or municipality or whomever they're working for. And sometimes competition is a secondary concern for them. It's not front of mind, it's can I get somebody to fill this contract? And so getting them thinking about, well, what looks like a suspicious bid? What looks like cover bidding? What looks like taking turns? And that's already brought us some really great leads. And we look forward to bringing our investigations to the point where they're public and we have something exciting to announce.
Then there's enforcement. Michael Kadish is Deputy Assistant Attorney General with the U.S. Department of Justice.
I think what you'll see is more cooperation. Right, last Friday, Minnesota was at the podium with the Department of Justice in our Agristrats case, which is a case we've mentioned involves information sharing, increasing food prices. I think you'll see more of that because these are local markets, and so there's a real synergy. You're going to continue to see the USDA work with the antitrust division and, you know, looking at how to use both antitrust and Packers and Stockyards to fix these problems. More generally, if anything I've said has come through, it's that these are markets with a lot of market power or monopsony power. There is lots of conduct that looks like the abuse of market power or monopsony power, and we will continue to pursue those cases where we find them and do it aggressively.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
It's the Wyoming King Ranch.
Mark Isley is with the King Ranch in Cheyenne, Wyoming, president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
Originally started by three brothers that immigrated to America and started in the sheep business, and kind of a success story in itself. But great place, had the first flock of Corydell sheep in the United States, and it's been a cattle ranch since 68.
And Wyoming's King Ranch is also an award-winning ranch.
Well, that fortunately happened under my watch with lots of contributions from friends and neighbors and family, but we were acknowledged for our management and resource practices, our sustainability, our interaction with agencies, and a whole multitude of good things. And to be even nominated for that is an honor. To have won our state one, a big deal. So we were very proud of that.
It's easy to watch TV or movies and get an idea of what raising cattle in Wyoming might be like.
Well, it's a labor of love. I love what I do, and I love my colleagues in the business and the industry. But a lot of shows on TV and in the movies have glamorized some of the things that aren't really that important, the drama and some of the personal interactions. But the issues that sometimes they breach, the conflicts with developers, money, land grabbers, those kind of things, agencies, those are all real, very, very much so. And that's the kind of thing. And I'm both a public lands and a private lands rancher, so I experienced some of that up close and personal. In fact, I had bought into the ranch and took over the grazing permit when cattle free by 1993 was the lay of the land or the motto for the activists at that time. So it was quite a steep learning curve.
And much like the theme in Yellowstone with activism, that is a real-life challenge.
It's a tremendous concern, and we're watching the activists use lots of different pages out of their playbook. They are they're pretending to be farmers, friends of farmers and ranchers, but they have their own agenda, and a lot of that agenda is to drive people off their properties, eliminate animal agriculture, and restrict their private property rights. And they're taking money from organizations that is their number one goal. So to see that weaponized against us is of great concern.
Isley says it's important to join together with others to fight the battles.
I'm fortunate enough from a state where our state association is strong and unified in that message. And I'm thrilled to be associated with NCBA. Because for the same reason, we're unified in our message. We disseminate real knowledge and real truth, and we dispel myths and eliminate those kind of threats, or at least reduce those threats to our producers so they can be productive. You know, agriculture is interesting because it's so sustainable if it's done properly. And if you look at operations that are multi-generational, you don't do that by abusing the resource. We love clean air, clean water, all those things that the public loves too, but we're the front line on that. And so these associations, they're the front line to help us survive that sort of thing and do better in our everyday job.
Mark Isley, President, National Cattlemen's Beef Association. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Agriculture remains the backbone of America.
The chairman of the House Agriculture Committee from Pennsylvania, G.T. Thompson.
But our nation's dedicated producers have been burdened with fractured supply chains, considerable input costs, relentless inflation, natural disasters, volatile markets, and labor shortages. Each is consistently worsened by ill-conceived, half-baked executive action by unelected bureaucrats in Washington. Our nation's farmers are bearing the brunt of it. And adding insult to injury, we're now a net importer facing the most significant decline in farm income in our history. Farmers impact our everyday lives, so how do we support those who provide so much to our families, to our nation, and to our world? The answer is a five-year farm bill. The Committee on Agriculture has spent the last 3 years listening to the concerns of America's producers and turning their words into legislation. We've received input, ideas, and suggestions from stakeholders and members alike through our public portals and listening sessions across the country. Through this transparent and exhaustive process, we have produced a bipartisan product that will provide effective tools to our producers by bolstering the safety net, strengthening nutrition programs and access opportunities, and revitalize rural America. Since our last farm bill was passed in 2018, our producers have faced countless challenges. The needs of farm country are self-evident. We've developed a bill to meet them and a responsibility to fund them. For nearly a year, I've tried to educate my colleagues, and the hand-holding has yielded nothing.
The vice chairman of the House Ag Committee from Georgia is Austin Scott.
Let me be clear. If you're a person who eats, and I suspect everyone is, then you should care about the Farm Bill. The Farm Bill sets a foundation of support for America's farmers and ranchers who produce the food and the fiber that we depend on a daily basis. Right now, farmers are struggling with rising input costs that make it more difficult for them to produce the food that we need. The House Agriculture Committee must make major improvements to Title I in the Farm Bill and address the impact that high input prices are having on America's farm families. The farm safety net in Title I has decreased due to the increases in production costs, and current reference prices for most commodities do not reflect the increased cost of farming today. The current statutory reference prices were established in the 2014 Farm Bill using 2012 cost of production data. I want to say that again. We're using the 2012 data to determine the point at which support under price loss coverage kicks in if the market prices fall below the reference price during a time when producers are seeing record high input costs. This has created a no-win situation for our farmers, and it is vital to our country that they are able to do their jobs. No part of the farm safety net should guarantee a profit. The farmers know this. It's something our producers agree on. But if reference prices don't move, then our producers are effectively left with no stop-loss assistance in the event of a commodity collapse. Supporting our farmers through increased reference prices in the Farm Bill means that we support those who grow the crops to sustain our food supply. Without reference price increases in this next Farm Bill, there's not enough assistance from Congress and the USDA for many farm families in our country to continue to grow the food and the fiber that we depend on. As the chairman of the General Farm Commodities Risk Management and Credit Subcommittee, I'm committed to making significant improvements to Title I and give the support that our farmers deserve.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
We found, you know, a significant lack of competition in our retail grocery sector.
Matthew Boswell is commissioner of the Competition Bureau in Canada.
We found our independent grocers were finding it more and more challenging to compete because of very widespread property controls that are in place in Canada and that are authorized under provincial legislation, restrictive covenants preventing independent grocers from going into plazas and et cetera. Mm-hmm. Also, independent grocers had to rely on the large grocers who also controlled wholesale to a great extent in the country. We found, you know, we said that international entry would be very beneficial for Canada. We have examples of that. Costco and Walmart have had a positive impact in the country. But even with that, we still have tremendous concentration over the last 30 years, where we used to have 8 big domestic players and down to 3. So not surprisingly, our advocacy was very timely. There was a tremendous amount of interest. And we made a series of recommendations really to governments at all levels in Canada in terms of how they could address these the serious lack of competition or in the retail grocery sector. And we're seeing now some responses to that, including a bill that was passed in our parliament just before the end of 2023 that put in a tool for us to address restrictive covenants, property controls. Mm-hmm. Also put in a tool quite handily for us where we finally have the power to compel information during market studies because, once again, the grocery companies weren't, how do we word it in our report, they weren't fully cooperative with our requests for information to be provided voluntarily, and this came out to Parliament and they changed our law. So we're using that other side of the house, the advocacy side, to try and achieve pro-competitive outcomes in Canada in this specific area.
Your answer reminds me of a phrase that remarkably hasn't come up yet in our conversation, which is food deserts, even though I suspect everyone on stage cares about this profoundly.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if in Canada you see the same dynamic play out that we see here in the United States, where independent grocers are far more likely to serve these communities. And they often serve different communities than do the major or the big boxes. And so they're more likely to serve poor rural Americans and poor urban Americans. Mm-hmm. And so do you see that in your work?
So we're seeing that, and these property controls play a big role in that, where, you know, a lease can be entered that by a big grocer that says, nobody else can come into this plaza and sell food. They're even, you know, going so far as to put these restraints on competition, these barriers to competition, on title itself. So even if the grocer moves out of that plaza, the big grocer, nobody can ever go in. So we're looking very carefully at these restrictive covenants in Canada. We actually, it's public. We have an investigation going on into it. But one of the things that, you know, comes into play in the consideration is the creation of these food deserts and the harm to communities by having these property controls in place. So, yes, it's something we're paying a lot of attention to right now. In fact, we're going to come out with a discussion paper on property controls, and the role they play in competition in Canada in probably a couple of weeks. So it is right top of our radar.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Anytime there is a disruption in logistics, there's a ripple effect.
Kurt Blades with the Association of Equipment Manufacturers on the bridge collapse in Baltimore.
And even if it wasn't an important market for equipment, which it is, but even if it wasn't, we would still be feeling some ripple effects. What I've been able to hear from our members and really what farmers have been able to see is that, you know, we're a pretty resilient market. We responded quickly. And obviously we want that port to get open as quick as it possibly can. We was last week in Washington, D.C., and we were hearing some indications that, you know, that progress is coming along quickly. But we also know that this is a really important time for farmers. So our manufacturers responded pretty quickly and, you know, moved some of that volume to Savannah right away and moved equipment into areas so it wouldn't have minimal disruption on that important planting season. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's happening below the surface, but I think overall, those of us on the consuming side have very little effects on that. But obviously, anytime there's a jolt in logistics, it's a challenge. And we want, you know, our hearts go out, you know, to those that lost their lives during that tragedy, but also I think, you know, it just points to how resilient, you know, the manufacturing sector is in responding to challenges and figure out ways to make the disruption as minimal as possible.
Baltimore is just 30 miles from Washington, D.C., but it's the site of a big opportunity for ag.
I am so excited to be having our second celebration of modern agriculture on the National Mall. That's the first week of May, May 6th, 7th, 8th. Well, we're going to have probably 40 different pieces of modern farm equipment and a number of trade associations as well, telling that story of modern agriculture to legislators, policymakers, the general public, really anyone that's willing to listen, to tell that story of how this equipment's pretty fun and makes a big difference. What is amazing when you speak with people from, you know, say EPA or even USDA and OSHA that have not seen modern farm equipment or maybe haven't been on a farm in 5 to 10 years, and you see their eyes light up when they see firsthand what's going on with the technology and what we're able to do with sensors and optical sensors, and it is a fun story to tell. So looking forward to doing that with the whole ag industry here in a couple of weeks. And, you know, I'd ask all of your listeners, if they happen to be in the D.C. area that week, come by and see us. Or even better, tell your elected officials to come see us on the National Mall so they can do a better job of communicating to their peers that aren't as familiar with the ag market as we approach this important farm bill season.
Even though Blades is focused on ag, the Association of Equipment Manufacturers covers the gamut.
You bet. The Association of Equipment Manufacturers actually represents, you know, mechanization and technology in five sectors: ag, construction, forestry, mining, and utilities. And you would think that those are very different sectors, and in many ways they are, because they serve very different markets. But the technology is actually pretty similar in all of those. So the issues are the same across all five of those sectors oftentimes.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
That a new farm bill has yet to be passed by Congress shows the multiple challenges faced in the process of drafting a farm bill and making it law. That, according to Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, as he discussed some of those challenges with members of the North American Agricultural Journalist Organization Monday in Washington, D.C.
The issue concerning reference prices, specifically what reference prices get impacted and adjusted, how to pay for them. We know that there's a lot of conversation about improvements to crop insurance and how to create a structure that encourages more participation. Clearly a lot of conversation as well about conservation and whether or not the investment in conservation of the IRA should remain in the IRA or should be placed within the farm bill, and placed within the farm bill whether or not it would continue to have a climate smart focus or whether it would be open up for other uses.
Lawmakers have until September 30th to approve a new farm bill, as that is when the extension of the 2018 farm bill is set to expire. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.